Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. This week, I'm joined by...
Hi, my name is Maury Minhas, she, her, longtime listener, first-time co-host, relatively recent citizen of the U.S., a San Francisco native, living in New York City for almost 12 years, multilingual, multicultural Bangladeshi-American. I love all things sciences, stress baking, archery, and a recent video game enthusiast.
We have got a packed episode for you today. So much to talk about. We've got Maury reporting from Ground Zero in New York City, where they've been hit the biggest by COVID-19 here in the U.S. But you think you're having it bad? Well, listen here, the Karens of the world are really having a time of it, as a journalist has taken this as the opportune time to ask, is Karen the N-word for white women? Let's discuss. That Rona is still raging, and like I said, we've got so much to talk about. We talk about how it's affecting transplant patients. It affected the Wisconsin primary. How some politicians are using this as an opportune time to pass laws, mostly on the evil side, but there is one or two good ones. Also, domestic violence is on the rise, and that queen gave a speech making us wish that we had lost the American Revolution. What could have been? In the main corner, we investigate a tale as old as time. Yes, it wouldn't be a pandemic without some good old-fashioned American racism. We explore America's history of racism in times of pandemics and how it's affecting the Asian American community, and how Andrew Yang's op-ed pushing for Asian Americans to prove their Americanness maybe wasn't the right way to go, and is bringing up some past feelings of World War II Japanese-American internment camps for some. On the entertainment front, Maury watched The Tiger King and has a quick review. We both are burning with love for Kerry Washington and Reese Witherspoon's Little Fires Everywhere, which, fuck daddy issues, this show is bringing front and center the complicated relationships between mothers and daughters and what spawns into mommy issues. And I am a little late, but I am jumping into The Wire, which has essentially ruined television for me. Plus, Ozark Season 3. Oh my God, did you watch? We couldn't sit or unclench our butts until it was over. And make sure that you stick around to the very end, because I have some words and encouragement and love for my Bernie Sanders supporters. All this and so much more on a brand spanking new episode of Minority Corner. So let's get ready to learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner. Ring, ring, ring. Is there 911? Hello? Is there a doctor in the house?
No, you can't say that. I am not a doctor. I was going to tell you, don't bring that up.
Okay. Well, there we go. In my mind, you're the doctor of my life. I'll tell you that.
Maybe someday, but not today.
You always hate it. You hate it when I call you that, but you're Dr. Maury in my book, always and forever. It's also kind of like my audition for that crazy show 911 on Fox.
No. Watch that.
It's batshit banana. Well, excuse me, Miss no. Almost a Doctor. You should be watching that show as research. They're based on true stories.
Is it like a Chicago PD? Or like
even more crazy. For example, there was a couple who was like having sex in a bounce house, and the winds in LA were so strong that the bounce house was near this mountain, and it blew them almost off the cliff, and they like were calling 911 as they were like almost falling down a cliff. And then so you got to know what to do. You got to know how to handle that.
Okay.
Just a little research. So you're in what has been dubbed ground zero of this pandemic for the United States. Reporting live, how's it going?
It's crazy here. It's so empty. The streets are super empty. for good reasons, yeah. And that's good, that people should be staying home. But
you're not like, oh no, where are all the people? I want to hang out.
But the hospitals are overrun. We get, you know, updates from the head of our department every day. And he's a really great writer. Actually, he was featured on like Washington Post as like someone who's like giving people hope sort of, or like kind of like giving us news from the action. But it's just they are converting places that are not even equipped to be hospital-like into hospitals. Within the hospital, we got non-ICU units being converted to ICUs. The ORs are being converted to ICU. Conference rooms are being converted. Wow. There are just not enough space, and there's huge amount of people just infected coming in. There's like a makeshift situation in Central Park that they have like a tent hospital.
I can't even imagine it. Is it at the Sheep's Meadow where I had my, or is it, where is it? Is that the Grand Lawn where I had my 34th or 43rd birthday, depending on which way the balloons were blowing?
I'm not actually sure exactly where in Central Park, but they have a small one there. The Navy sent us a ship.
Yeah.
And that.
Was it the SS Mercy?
Was it Mercy? Mercy's in LA.
Oh,
wait.
Okay.
Comfort. SS Comfort. That's the one here.
There it is. Oh, yeah. That seems actually more comforting anyways.
Yeah. Well, at first, they weren't taking any COVID patients. And people were like, what's the deal? Like, that's why you're here.
Well, same thing with, there was like three people. And like the Javits Center also was converted, which is like, I mean, I've been to the Javits Center. I was there for the Hillary Clinton, what I thought was going to be the election night party. Mm-hmm. Was just a sad funeral for America. I've also been there for Comic-Con, and it's just so wild to think about this, you know, one of the largest convention center in New York becoming this hospital. And even then, they weren't going to convert it to, they weren't going to take any like COVID patients.
Yeah.
And there was like three people there.
Yeah. So, but I think that recently, not too long ago, a couple of days ago, USS Comfort is now taking people in because the people, the head of the hospitals in the city were like, we need more support. Like, there's just no way that we can keep these patients. And I guess the plan was that the USS Comfort would take people who are non-COVID patients in, like emergency, you know, accidents and stuff like that. But because people are not out hanging out, there's no like incidents and where people need to go.
There's not a lot of accidents, things like that.
Right. So
yeah.
So like they only had 15 people and they have like space for 2,000 or something like that.
A ways. Change it up. Yeah.
But now they are taking people. So
well, that's really great. It's, you know, super good to hear. And again, I mean, you know, when you look at like South Korea, what they were doing from the very beginning when they were not only, you know, testing, like again, like I think today, South Korea had like, I think they had like 40 new cases. They only had like hundreds of people had died there, like 200, I think it was something like, because, you know, everybody got tested, everybody got classified as either as four different categories. So, you know, everybody who was really, really sick or elderly got put into the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then if you were asymptomatic or just had mild symptoms, then they had rented out all of these, you know, hotels and dormitories that they quarantined everybody at and were able to, you know, put people away and look at the response that, you know, had happened.
Yeah. I was on a webinar yesterday and today. Yesterday was the webinar that was put out by European Transplant Society. Yeah. So it was about how they're taking care of transplant patients who are immunosuppressed in this like situation that's going on. So they were saying Italy, I didn't know this, the exact number, I didn't know until yesterday, 12.3% mortality rate, which is very, very high. I think
that's huge.
Yeah, I think we are below 3%, like 2.7, I think. I need to confirm that. But yeah, so
that's high.
And today there was a webinar that they talked about how people are taking care of transplant patients in the U.S. And it's pretty much the same. You know, it's just like you have to, they're halting all transplants that are living donors so that like the donor who's healthy isn't being exposed. But then they're the recipient who would get the liver or whatever organ, kidney, but they're in a dire need. They were depending on this transplant. So they're facing a lot of obstacles in that situation too. So
you're telling me that I should wait to get my transplant of my new green eyes? I want green eyes. I guess I'll just have to wait for contacts. Well, you know, if you think that you and I are having it bad, you know who's really having it bad, Maury?
Who?
Karens.
Oh God, of course Karens are having it so bad.
Karens of the world are having it bad. So a friend of mine sent me this article from OK Player, and essentially, I can't even say this seriously. So the question from this article is Karen the N-word for white women?
No, oh
an
God.
Investigation.
Jesus.
And this all started when a journalist based in the UK asked the simple question, does anyone else think that Karen slur is a, that the Karen slur, so they even said it as a, that Karen is a slur, is women hating and based on class prejudice? And then there was another tweet that said, the term Karen is being used as a sexist and racial slur. Considering this is an equivalent to the N-word for white women, should it be banned on Twitter? Yes or no? And it was like a survey.
Right.
So they're having a moment, Karens of the world.
Let's just go by the rule that just never compare anything to the N-word. How about that? Like, let's just don't even go there.
Well, look, listen to when you ask, like, you have to, you can't even say one of the words you can say fully, and
exactly.
The other ones you can't. So, I think that tells you the answer right then and there. Like, if you have to ask, like, is the N-word comparable to, or is Karen comparable to the N-word? You just answered your question because you couldn't even say the other
one. Yeah. Am I saying K-word? No.
Oh my God. And then like someone asked like, well, which class is this like hurting? And then, you know, like in terms of like, you know, if it's putting it as a class, Zumba class.
Oh my God. Oh man. I love Twitter for like just the snarky, funny people. And
it
I
does
always
have its moments.
Just, I love those, but then the rest, like this Karen situation is not a situation.
I mean, this question in of itself is a very Karen-y question, you know?
It totally is.
And I guess it's like only a Karen would ask this question. And like, I guess maybe it's because all the restaurants are closed that they don't have like, you know, managers to go and speak to. So they're now asking, like, this is what they're taking.
The Twitter manager. The Twitter manager. They're asking the Twitter manager.
They do. That's why they asked that survey. They're like, I need to speak to the Twitter manager because I need to have this taken down.
Was the person who posed this question to begin with, is she a Karen?
Well, I mean, her name is Julie, but she's British and she damn near well be. She's a Karen in my book.
Maybe.
And I have to say, like,
Julie should be a slur.
Maybe. Well, I mean, Karen, you know, Becky, Stacy, they all go into the same boat. And here's the thing. You know what? It's just the luck of, like, here's what happens. Like, names, it's the luck of the draw, ladies and gentlemen. Like, sometimes, like, and you have to wear it heavy as the crown that's laid on top of you. Like, you just have to roll with the punches.
Yeah.
Like, I was James and the Giant Peach. Like, some people, you know, have songs written about that.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of Monica in my life.
Life, yeah.
Roxanne. Like, good golly, Miss Molly.
Yeah, and I have a TV show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like Maury Povich.
Listen, we all got shit, and we just had to go with it, you know?
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself and I'm Morgan Rhodes and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Well, something not as fun. So we have a buttload of coronavirus. That's a weird sentence to say. No one should hopefully have a buttload of coronavirus. But we have some updates. So coronavirus is happening. The Queen gave a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, so the Queen gave a speech. I haven't watched it. It's 4 minutes. This woman, I almost said something very disrespectful. I want to try to find the right words to describe this girl without being disrespectful.
Disrespectful? Get out. Stop it. Akon over here. I can't
damn,
believe that song was...
Damn, this queen
bitch.
Is a smart bitch. Oh, you call her a sexy? Okay, Maury. Okay, yeah, she's sexy too.
Oh my
too.
God. That song. How did that song even get away with it? Because it was like 2008.
I want to try to find the right words without being disrespectful. Damn, you's a sexy bitch. Well, you know what? In Akon's defense, he did say that he was going to try.
Okay.
So yeah, he tried. Did. And that's
he
like...
He attempted,
I think, the thing that he's literally showing, like, this is as far as I can go. I tried to not be disrespectful, but you a sexy bitch. I think it's fine if you know the person to call them a sexy bitch, but if you don't know them and you come up to them... In the club. Well, we don't really have those anymore. When you come up to them on, I don't know, the Tinder, and you like, DM you a sexy bitch, that's a little too much. But anyways, this sexy bitch, the queen, she, that's the new like title. That's the new, you know, if you call someone a sexy bitch, it means you're being respectful. I'm going to let Akon, you know, call
have
it.
This one. Yeah.
So that queen, that sexy bitch, the queen, she gave a speech and she rarely talks. Like she gives her Christmas speech and she's like, you know, and she's been around since, obviously she's like 93, but she's been around since like World War II. This woman has seen some things.
Everything. Yeah.
She gave like a really comforting speech about like, you know, we're going to get through this and come on, governor, pip, pip, cheerio, all that good stuff. Let me wave. It's me, the queen. I'm a sexy bitch. All that good stuff. And I've never really understood, like I've talked about this recently with our friend Michelle. I talked about, like, I don't really understand the monarchy. I think it's dumb. Get rid of it. And then when she gave that speech, I'm like, well, if this is what having a queen means, then, like, I wish we had lost the American Revolution.
Oh.
Well, which I stand on. I think slavery would have ended sooner, so.
Yeah. Or, we never know, right?
Oh, because, like, the British stopped using slavery way before we did. So, I think that we should have lost. And then we would have... That we'd still be underneath. We probably still would have gotten our freedom or our sovereignty. I don't know what the right word is, but similar to Canada, like the Queen is actually still the Canada is still part of like.
Is that how it is for New Zealand too?
And Australia and a bunch of places, a lot of islands and shit. So yeah, she's still the sovereign, I guess. I don't know. Tweet at us, Brits. But anyway, she gave that speech. I thought that was really dope because meanwhile, Boris Johnson, who's an idiot. Who's their prime minister, who was bragging about shaking hands with people who had coronavirus.
He's got the Rona. Yep.
He got the Rona. Yep,
he's
in the hospital.
He's got the Rona.
So, also, speaking of politics and how people be dumb. So, Wisconsin, it's, today we're recording this on Tuesday. All the other states have postponed all of their primaries. Remember the primaries?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually... I'm going to do absentee ballot, so I applied to get my forms, but...
Nice. Everyone should, wherever you are, go ahead if you can... Everyone should apply for an absentee ballot. Everyone should mail in. So Wisconsin still voted today because Republicans made sure that that was still going to happen.
I mean, you know, evil doesn't take a break.
Well, the thing that... good point. Oh, my God. That is good. It don't. Not even during the Rona.
No. Nope.
So, that's so good. Evil does not take a break. So, what's so frustrating to me about this is it made me really think... I almost every day I wake up and I just think, fuck you to people who didn't vote in 2016 because they didn't like Hillary Clinton or something, you know?
Or fuck, just didn't vote at all.
And I say that because... The Supreme Court essentially helped these state Republicans in Wisconsin to uphold that they were going to have their elections today and that they weren't going to allow people to. They even were fighting to just, the Democrats are trying to fight to just even allow them to be able to mail in their ballots and have it be accepted for a longer period of time. Supreme Court shot all this shit down. God. And it passed by a 5-4 ruling. 5-4.
Oh my God.
5-4. Trump has nominated and he's put two justices.
I can't believe he got two. All people, he got two.
He got two. And honestly, if Hillary Clinton would have gotten in, she probably would have had three because Ruth Bader Ginsburg would have she would have stepped down. She's literally holding on because she's like, I have to.
Yeah, poor woman.
And so you're having this thing in Wisconsin as a battleground state. You know, it's just these moments that keep coming up. And even just what we're dealing with right now with the pandemic, it's like mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton wouldn't have fired the head of the mm-hmm. pandemic response team. We would have, you know, had just the laundry list of things that we're dealing with right now. We wouldn't have states having to outbid each other for medical equipment.
Which is ridiculous. That is crazy. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't. It's like, I'm like always left speechless when I hear things like that because you have, you know, healthcare people just working their ass off, getting infected. Some of them are in the hospital and they're sick too.
Yeah.
But they are doing what they're doing and they don't have any, you know, the personal protection equipment.
Oh, yeah, hands down. Well, and, you know, the thing is, you know, like my aunt, she's retired. She's a nurse. And mm-hmm. Gavin Newsom had, you know, pretty much rang the bell. He was like, we need people to, you know, come back. Mm-hmm. And my aunt's like, whoops, I never, you know, she didn't renew her license. And he's like,
yeah,
doesn't matter. We'll take anybody. If you're a student, if you've looked at a stethoscope, we'll take you.
Looked at, yeah.
And my aunt's like, you know, I would go back, but they can't guarantee my safety. And it's like, I can't blame mm-hmm. her. You know, she's also in the at-risk like age group mm-hmm. and we mm-hmm. can't, you know, especially, you know, Trump, that guy in the White House, I hate saying his name. He said that he's, you know, wartime president, then dude, you need to do what you need to, get to work. Jared Kushner up there. Oh, Jared Kushner is a troll.
Total troll.
Watch. There's a series Dirty Money on Netflix. There's an
episode. It's going to make me mad, huh?
Cause like, I kind of knew that he was like a bit of a fuckboy and then I didn't really know fully. There's an episode that's specifically on Jared Kushner as a realist, like just his story and journey and like how he's fucked
he's
over
like
a lot of people in real estate.
Right?
He's a slumlord. Yes. Yeah. And it's wild. And then you just and then it puts in perspective this guy who's calling all these shots and like really what's, you know, going up there. And he tried to say like, oh, you know, cause there's like the federal stockpile of PPE. Mm-hmm. And then he had the nerve to say, this is ours. Excuse me. Is New York not part of the United States of America? Like, is California not part of the United States of America? Who's going to use it? Just you, Jared Kushner? Like, who are you waiting for? Like, it's
you know,
ours?
They have,
what are you talking about?
They have this vendetta against the
people,
cities.
Humans?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Poor people?
In general, but like cities that are usually blue-leaning.
Mm.
And they found a way to punish these cities, you know? That's what
right.
they're doing.
You're seeing different states like Florida once they finally started, like, realizing what was going on and they got their equipment right away. Like, mm-hmm. you're seeing, it's a mess. And it's again, people not voting, this is what you've created. Like, when you didn't vote, you voted for this. And if you're thinking about doing that same thing again, you need to think twice. Like, you have blood on your hands. People are dying. I get really upset. I hate playing the blame game. But you have to take ownership. Like, honestly, like, you... And I mean that in a good way of, like, you know what? Being honest and be like, you know what? I didn't vote because I didn't like Hillary Clinton. I fucked up. I'm not going to do that this time around. You need to get out there. You need to speak. You need to knock on doors. Talk. Don't knock on any doors. Text
not
people.
Not now. Yeah. Yeah.
Text people. Donate. Get involved because this shit is even, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, I knew I was waiting for these facts to come in. I just knew in the back of my head as all this shit was happening, I was like, this is going to hurt Black and brown and poor communities the hardest. And surprise, it is. And we've got some data. So ProPublica reported as of Friday morning, African Americans made up almost half of Milwaukee County's 945 cases and 81% of its 27 deaths in a county whose population is 26% Black. Now, Milwaukee is in where? Wisconsin, where they still want these people to go out there and vote. And again, it's another way to disenfranchise voters. And even Trump has come out. Trump and the Republicans have also said that high voter turnout makes it so Republicans can't win. Then I'm sorry. Like, I can't fathom. Like, if you are not what people want, then I'm sorry. You're not what people want. And you need to rebrand. Like, stop trying to make fetch happen. Like, Republicans are fetch, and it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Yeah.
Like, it's dying out, and you limiting the rights of other people. It's everyone's constitutional right to be able to vote. If anything, you know, establishing voter by mail for everybody should have been happened or made it so everyone has the opportunity to vote in a more fair way.
I mean, the reason why they win these places in general, like even from 2016, and it's because they count on voter suppression.
Yes.
In one way or another, like whether it be like right now with Wisconsin, where they didn't let people, you know, do the absentee ballot for a longer period of time, or just in general with like not letting Black people vote because of one reason or another. And they do really rely on people not showing up.
Yep. Yep.
And that's like, what part of that is democracy? I don't know. You know,
well, it's like, but they're putting their own constituents at risk because they tend to skew older, who are even, I mean, I don't really buy into the fact that it's more deadly for certain. I mean, everybody is dying regardless of age at this point. So I think that's sort of a mute thing. But, you know, elderly, like you're putting these people at risk, which they have been with their misinformation from day one. Like,
oh, yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. You're going to have to make people choose between literally voting and dying. Like, I get Puffy came up with that phrase vote or die, but it was just
a
metaphor, but now it literally is vote or die. And then in Michigan, where the state's population is 14% Black, African Americans made up 35% of the cases and 40% of deaths as of Friday morning. And then in New Orleans, where they had Mardi Gras, and surprise, it's spreading like a Taylor Swift song. Sorry, I don't know why I went to go dig on her.
Like a wildfire. Okay.
I'm in California. Don't say that. That's dangerous.
Ooh, okay.
It's spreading like, I don't know, bees.
Spreading like Corona is spreading.
Yeah, you know, down in New Orleans, where it's spreading like Corona, because it is Corona. Louisiana has not published cases breakdowns by race, but 40% of the state's deaths have happened in Orleans Parish, where majority of the residents are Black. And so we actually don't have a lot of data from anywhere else, because a lot of states, like even like Mississippi, they're not specifically recording the race breakdowns, which makes it really hard to break all this stuff down. I know that Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, Representative Ayanna Pressley and Senator Elizabeth Warren, are calling for this to be added on. And we actually don't even really know what the death rate is, because there are some people who have been classified as dying of like pneumonia, but it could absolutely have been COVID-19. So our numbers, they're actually higher than what we really, not to, you know, freak everybody else out, but
It's true. And also because we don't have enough test kits. So if there's not enough test kits, not enough people are getting tested. And so the number that we know right now, it sounds really high, like I think it's 30 something thousand. That actually isn't accurate, because we don't know. There's so many people who are not getting tested.
Yeah.
That number is not really reliable. It's probably much, much higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, again, like it's affecting the Black and brown and poor and even these rural people. And the South is going to get hit really hard as well, because they've left, you know, so many hospitals have closed because we have a for-profit hospital system. Yep. And so if there's not, you know, there's not just beds and ventilators hanging around because no one's using them. They're expensive. And you have all these hospitals that have closed in rural areas or down in the South, or they have really difficult medical systems down there in the South because they don't want Obamacare, but then they are not, you know, being cared for, and they've left up a lot of the stuff for the states to figure out when it comes to their medical.
Yeah. I mean, here's another just ridiculous, infuriating thing is, like, you know, all these like rich celebrities are getting tested because they are rich, you know, they can afford it. Mm-hmm. So like these like NBA players and this like celebrities. I mean, we found out Idris Elba got tested. Like, how did he get tested before everyone else? Before someone who's like actually sick, you know?
Oh, I watched Oprah's doing on Apple TV, if you have it. Mm-hmm. Oprah's doing like a COVID-19 sort of special where she's doing just sort of Skype calls with her famous friends. And she had interviewed Idris Elba, and it was kind of a miracle that he was able to get tested, because what happened was, I'm glad I watched this. So what happened was, as he was talking to Oprah, he had come into contact with a very high-profile person, not an actor, but as a high-profile person, and it was put out into the news that this person had tested positive. And he had just flown, he had just flown to New Mexico to shoot a movie, and he was like, I'm going to be on this set. Like, I mean, hundreds of people are on these movie sets, and you're in contact with them. And they had a doctor come out and to him, and the doctor only had like, I think three, he got like the last test. The doctor only had like three of them as it was. So he almost, it was going to be hard for even him. It just was really sort of like luck and happenstance. And it's a good thing that he did get tested, because he tested positive, you know?
Right. Okay. All right. Fine. I'll take that one back.
But it wasn't like he just went to like the front of the line. Case in point, like Kathy Griffin, like I know she's, you know, her career's been fucked over because of Trump, but like even like she was deathly ill in the hospital recently, and she couldn't get a test. Like, they wouldn't test her, even though she had all the symptoms. She was having trouble breathing, and they still wouldn't test her. And she was like, listen, just because you're rich doesn't mean that you can get a test.
Yeah. Okay. But what I was going to say was that More of the people who does have money is getting tested. That's for sure.
That's fair.
And then on top of that, freaking the Tigers and the Lions and the Bronx Zoo got tested. And my question is, why are we testing this big cat?
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that. Because that's right. And I heard a tiger tested positive for COVID-19. Yeah. And I didn't even think twice about it. But you know why that happened. You know why. Because whoever watched that, that tiger documentary?
Tiger King?
Oh, everyone's got tigers on the brain. My mom started watching it today.
I watched it. And okay. It was, I wish I could get my time back.
Really? Because everyone's raving about it. Because I kind of tend to like not go on those sort of like Duck Dynasty type things. Although I think it's important to hear other stories, which is why I like The Ozark or The Wire, because you're seeing parts of America that you normally don't see, because most stories are like LA and New York, you know?
Yeah. I could have done without this one.
Wow, hard pass. Maury's going to give it a hard pass. Fair.
I mean, no, I actually watched it. So really, it wasn't a pass because I already wasted my time.
Your vote for people is to give it a pass.
Yes.
Like, definitely. Okay, good.
I think just watch a different documentary.
There's tons of stuff to watch. Watch the Hillary Clinton documentary.
Like. Yeah. I mean, this one, it was basically just like, look at these ridiculous people.
I don't need that.
You know, that's what it felt like to me. And it was just, I don't know, maybe people can tell me differently, but I don't know. I just felt like it was just ridiculous. And all this, like, I have my problem with it, but we don't have to go into it.
Okay, well, that's totally fair. Other things, one, this is a really great thing that I heard that is happening in France. So women who are trying to escape, you know, abuse, what I mean, like, I'm so grateful that I have a place to stay, that I have, you know, food, I have work, I have my Body Boss home workout equipment.
Ooh.
staying fit, summer waits for nobody.
Yeah.
But like,
you know, might end up staying home in the summer. But still.
But I will still be snapping some photos for the gram. you can see me from my balcony. But, you know, some people are in some really terrible situations. Like, can you imagine being in lockdown with an abusive partner or an abusive parent? Or, and so in France, there's... and I think that something like a lot of the call centers for abuse have actually seen a decrease in calls, but that's because they're not able to call because they're around their partner. There's a lot of whispered calls, but apparently in the pharmacies, they're using the code MASK19. So they're going to the pharmacies and saying, oh, I need to order a MASK19. And that's code that they need to escape an abusive situation at home. So I don't know if that's caught over here in the States, but if you work at a pharmacy and someone comes saying MASK19, they need help. So that's what that means.
Yeah. No, that's a great, great idea.
Yeah.
And I hope it catches on here.
Because they saw, I mean, especially when when there's also economic recession, there tends to be a spike in domestic violence. Same thing too on the Super Bowl. There's a spike of domestic violence that like when men aren't getting their ways, like
the rest of us have to be careful.
Terrible. Fucking terrible. Two other things, too, of just keeping an eye out and why it's so important for us to vote. This is what happens when you don't vote because, you know, some lawmakers are using this as an opportunity to pass some really terrible thing. Like the Idaho passed two discriminatory laws against transgender folks. So the governor, Brad Little, signed two bills into law denying transgender people basic rights. One known as the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Don't act like you care about the women's sports because that's not what this is about. It essentially prohibits transgender girls and women from playing on women's sports teams, and the other prohibits trans people from obtaining a new birth certificate showing their correct gender. Like, now is the time that you're doing that. Like, that's what you're doing. This is what you're doing with your time.
Yep. What did I say? Evil doesn't take a break.
Evil does not take a break. This is some Karen shit right here.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that Karen would do.
This is like, you know, it's like, this huge thing is happening. Everyone's distracted. So they just wanted to fly under the radar and pull this bullshit.
Your people need help. How about you? Idaho still at this time hasn't even, I don't believe, declared a stay-at-home order. And you're doing this shit? This is what you're spending your time doing? And then some states have limited abortion. Like, I think a Texas judge had blocked. Let's see. So officials in Iowa and Ohio are being sued over their attempts to severely restrict abortion access, deeming it as a non-essential procedure. When are you supposed... I just don't understand. Because before you know it, the baby's here, and it's, you know... And then a Texas judge blocked a similar order from the state's governor that would have essentially banned all abortions in the state. So this is why y'all got to keep voting because these people
this is just ridiculous. This crazy shit.
And that's the thing is that like everyone gets so focused on the national election. This stuff isn't Trump's not doing this. This is happening local. So before you throw in the towel because your candidate didn't, you know, win the top of the ticket, which, you know, so much like elections. Elections are not rooting for a sports team. You don't get to be like, oh, my team's not in the Super Bowl. I guess I'm out. No, like you get back in the race. You don't always win in every way that you wanted to win, but you keep fighting and we push the needle. You win some and you lose some, but you keep fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, this is a plus thing that has happened, though. In California, you need to come back here because this state, Gavin Newsom, is doing it up.
Oh, I can't wait for him to run for presidency in, like, I don't know, maybe, like, 2024?
I know
maybe
it's going to happen. Soon, I think he's going to do it 2028. That's my... Yeah. He's still... I'm nervous because he's so handsome. And I just feel like he's so handsome that I feel like there could be some skeletons in the closet. And that's what makes me nervous. Because he's also so good. He's so woke. He was the first person that when he was the mayor of San Francisco, he was like, gays, come get married. Like, he just is so... He signed the Crown Act. Like, it bans discrimination against black people's hair in the workplace. Like, he's so great. I'm nervous.
I mean, we have who we have now, and there are skeletons and bodies everywhere for this person. So if that person got...
Yeah, right. We need to stop being, you know, that's a problem. Is that the
Democrats? It's, yeah. I mean, we are so afraid that, like, just a little something's going to get us, you know, in trouble or get our candidate in trouble. Oh, yeah.
You're right. Doesn't matter. Release the sex tape on Gavin Newsom. It doesn't matter. So for the next 2 years, menstrual products and diapers are going to be tax-free in California.
Oh, my God. Finally. That's great.
It's so fucking dumb that they're taxed anyways, because they should be essential needs and products don't have taxes on them.
Right.
So I'm sure, like, Viagra pills don't have taxes on them.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about a lot of shitty things that are happening, and I know a lot of people are probably like, oh, wait, one more shitty thing that happened.
We'll balance it out.
Okay. Well, you had brought this up to me. So these French doctors had suggested experimental COVID-19 vaccines should be tested on Africans.
Yeah.
And to go, like, hand in hand with that, Pence also, because he's our czar for the COVID response, which, like, let's remember how he handled the AIDS epidemic in Indiana. He has said that they're going to start testing people in Detroit for that. There's that malaria drug that Trump keeps saying is effective.
Hydroxychloroquine.
There it is. Thank you, Dr.
Dr. Quinn.
So they're going to start testing that on folks in Detroit. And, like, I mean, Detroit's just a heavily black area, and it's just, I'm getting Tuskegee Airmen, the Tuskegee experiments. I'm getting flashbacks of those all over again.
Yeah. I mean, I work in clinical trials. I do research, and we always talk about how not a lot of our participants are African-Americans. And there's a reason for that. Mm. You know, African-Americans are skeptical of clinical trials for good reasons.
Yeah.
Because of the history behind how they were treated with, like, when they did the syphilis, experiment, stuff like that. So it's just heartbreaking that it's 2020 and they're going to do this in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean, and it's funny because, I mean, a lot of black people are skeptical about the government in general because of the history of what's happened. Like, I'm having to dispel so many myths about what's happening with coronavirus and just amongst, like, my mother and her community and whatnot, because I get it. I can't always say, I'm like, listen, I understand there is distrust for the government and this is what happens. So it just makes situations like this really, really challenging. But enough about bad things are happening. So there's a lot of people who are feeling like, oh, what can I do? I'm like, I want to go hug someone, but I can't. Like, how can I help?
So I have two things to discuss.
Ooh, yeah.
So news just in. This happened I think this happened maybe like 5-6 hours ago.
This is fresh off the presses.
This is fresh, yeah. So Twitter founder Jack Dorsey, he is donating $1 billion. For Corona, like COVID related, global COVID-19 relief.
Amazing.
So he's going to do that first. And then after that, he wants to use the money for girls' health education.
Wow.
And then he will shift the rest of it to universal basic income.
That is so amazing.
Here we have someone with money who's using the money for, you know, good causes. So that's something to...
Well, and what I love about that is, you know, you're seeing actually a lot of politicians who are even running now, even at the local level. Again, politics is local. They're running on UBIs, like getting universal basic incomes. And so, again, like, even though your candidate didn't necessarily win, their ideas, if they are strong enough, will
they will live on.
Will live on. And I think that's the kind of the idea. I look back and I'm like, we had a really amazing primary. The discussions that we were held, reparations was talked about on the fucking debate stage. Like, there was, you know, we had real conversations about race. Like, when, you know, the presumptive, he's not the presumptive nominee yet, but, you know, let's say it's Joe Biden. He's got to be running on the most progressive platform that we actually have ever had to date. And even more so than Obama's, even more so than Clinton's. It's like, it's, and it's our job to hold that candidate. He works for us. And we have a guy who would then will actually at least listen to you. Whereas the other guy thinks that he's the boss, you know, like when Jared Kushner says they're ours, it's like, bitch, who do you think that you work for? Like, those are
you gonna
ours.
Use That's, your thousands of masks by yourself. Get out of here.
Just in your room and you and Ivanka can play like, dress up, like, you know, like, no, not interested. So it's like, there's never, the work just always continues. And I think that should inspire people of like, oh, you can put those ideas out there and they'll keep going. We keep going with them. That like, we have to remember, like, you know, even like every like slavery ended state by state. Gay marriage was passed state by state. Abortion was won state by state. And then there's a tipping point where then a federal law or the Supreme Court steps in. Like, that's how the United States was designed. This is how it works. It starts local and then you grow it from there. So that's why it's important to get involved locally or find a politician that's going to be your champion or be that politician and champion those ideas. Like,
yeah.
Stop looking at the big ticket. Let Joe Biden be our Trojan horse and let's get shit done.
So that was the first. And then the second thing is, so I am part of a nonprofit organization here in New York City. It's called Harboring Hearts, and it's a 501c3 organization based in New York City. It provides emergency housing and transportation and food and emotional support programming for critically ill heart patients and their families. So with this COVID-19 pandemic, the families that we help are facing more challenges. The surgeries are being canceled that has nothing to do with COVID. Like, all these other things are being canceled. So, you know, they are, and they're also, because of their underlying health issues, they are very susceptible to COVID as it is.
Right.
Also, like, their families, like the breadwinner of their family, they're losing jobs, incomes are, you know, dwindling down. So we are trying to help them. We want to continue to help them. A lot of our annual revenues come from fundraising, and a lot of our fundraising are in-person events.
Right.
So we hold these big events in hospitals. We do like smaller events that are like, you know, fitness ones or corporate events, and we get our funds from those sources. However, because we have to stay in place and we can't go and see people and have these events, we're in need of funds so to support them. So, you know, we are asking for donations. So if you feel like, you know, you're not doing anything, you want to do something, you see these people, you know, these healthcare professionals who are putting their lives in line, but you feel like you want to do something, please donate to our cause. You can go to harboringhearts.org/donate and you can, help us out. And your money will go directly to these patients and their families. So
that's perfect. I love that. And we'll also put a link for that down in the show notes. So easy access so you can get onto it.
Hey everyone, it's John Hodgman of the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
And I, Elliot Kalin of the Flophouse podcast.
And we've made a whole new podcast, a 12-episode special mini-series called iPodius, in which we recap, discuss, and explore the very famous 1976 BBC miniseries about ancient Rome called I, Claudius. We've got incredible guests such as Gillian Jacobs, Paul F. Tompkins, as well as star of I, Claudius, Sir Patrick Stewart, and his son, non-Sir Daniel Stewart.
Don't worry, Dan, you'll get there someday.
iPodius is the name of the show. Every week from MaximumFun.org for only 12 weeks. Get them at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Of course, it wouldn't be a pandemic without a little bit of racism. So we're going to look into how this pandemic is not only bringing COVID-19, but a little bit of racism. It's a tale as old as time that happens every century. So not only is we have COVID-19, also Corona has halted production of Corona.
Did you know that? the beer.
Yeah, like they've halted production because the name association, but which some people at one point thought that you can get Corona from Corona. You cannot. But apparently because Mexico has deemed it not an essential business or product, so they've halted. I'm not drinking right now, but if I was, I would say it's essential. It's my favorite beer, so that makes me sad.
I didn't know that was your favorite beer.
Yeah. Because it goes with tequila, and tequila is my favorite alcohol.
Okay, I knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just love it. And I love Mexican food. I just love things of the Latinx diaspora, especially when it comes to alcohol and food. So there's a history of pandemics and racism. In the 19th century, and during the antebellum period, the Irish were blamed for cholera. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, Italians were then blamed for polio. African Americans and Jews were blamed for tuberculosis. And in San Francisco, California, and LA, Chinese, Japanese, and even Mexicans, they got blamed for smallpox, typhus, TB, all those things that were coming out. And it's sort of this idea of, I don't know where it comes. It's like this idea of this outsider coming in, and they're weird and they're strange and they're different. And people just love to like blame things on other people. But it's sort of like, listen, all these viruses have been around. There's still more to, don't worry, there's still more to come.
Yeah. And it's just only going to get worse.
Only going to get worse. But hopefully we will be fun. I think if anything, I hope this has put us to, it's why you fund doctors and scientists. Like there's literally, you know, I watched that documentary of Pandemic, highly recommend, but there are these doctors who they're privately, because they're working essentially privately because there's nothing really funding to this, but they've been looking to try to create one flu vaccination as opposed to like, you know, every year you have to get a new one. They're trying to get, they're working so there'll just be one. And it's like, damn, this should have, and they struggle to get funding for this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, yeah, it's a small team. And so it's like, hopefully this will allow us that we should always be having research and money going into this, that we spend so much money on, you know, defense. Like this country, it's a joke. Like, where are my tax dollars?
Our tax dollars is in the military.
And we can't defend ourselves against, hello, we should have the best medical system in the world.
Yeah.
You know? So it will not surprise you based on that history and also just, you know, knowing America, it won't surprise you that Asian Americans are experiencing racism because of the origins of where it's believed that this, you know, COVID-19 has allegedly originated
yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Wuhan, China, right? Mm-hmm. And so Asian Americans are hearing all kinds of things, like, go back to your country. One woman was called Chinese coronavirus bitch, which that's, like, not that very creative. Although it did remind me of not Breaking Bad. What's the one that we like? There's a character, there's two, Julia Garner, who plays Ruth, she yells at Laura Linney, when she calls her a wolf bitch.
Wolf bitch.
That is my favorite. Move over, work bitch. There's a wolf bitch here. So good. I feel like I bet that moment wasn't even in the script. because it just is so random, but it's so her character that I just think she was so in the moment. Let's see. Oh, going back to the racial fun slurs. So, I mean, these are happening like all over the place. There was a Korean woman in Midtown Manhattan. She was confronted on the street. Someone was saying, "Where's your corona mask, you Asian bitch?" A lot of bitches being dropped, you know.
A lot of females are being targeted.
I don't think that they're trying not to find the right words to be disrespectful. They're just being disrespectful. Call them a sexy bitch instead.
Or just don't call them
sexy bitch.
Leave them alone.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of so just a lot of bananas things are happening. At a place called Church Fitness, somebody yelled at them, "Your people and your government caused this." At NYC Church Fitness, like, that's not a church I want to go to.
Mm-mm, no.
And there are no official numbers on hate crimes yet, but San Francisco State University found that a 50% rise in the number of news articles related to the coronavirus and anti-Asian discrimination between February 9th and March 7th. So, I mean, in some ways, a good thing that there is this sort of stay-at-home order happening at a lot of places, because it's limiting, you know, people are just too cuckoo bananas. We've lost our human interaction privileges. People are just going too much. So, but it has made some Asian Americans feel reluctant to even leave their house to go grocery shopping or even seek medical care for even something that might not be they're afraid to cough. They're afraid to sneeze because they're afraid of the aggression that might happen towards them.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah.
And it's been even worse on social media, as you can imagine, because if there's any problem that's happening in real life or anything that like, ooh, it's not great when human beings do that, put underneath the microscope of social media and it's magnified by 10 billion.
Oh, yeah. It's amplified to and people can hide behind a screen, you know?
Oh, so like the anonymity of it.
Yeah. The trolls and the terribleness is just like amplified to a crazy degree.
There was this one where there was these two Asian American guys who I think were just like, I don't know, doing something silly on TikTok, which don't even get me started on TikTok, but I will start. I cannot get on the board on another. So it took me long enough to get around to Instagram. And now there's another social media trend that you want me to get on. And it's just people doing silly videos. So many people are like, I have enough content to watch between my Netflix, my Hulu, my Disney Plus, and you also want me to watch your Instagram stories and your Facebook stories. It's just too much. And the content isn't as well produced. So I'm going to say no. I'm going to pass.
Do you remember Vine? It's like a reborn, you know? Yes. It's like a Vine part two.
I just guess I have no interest in watching people's videos of that, or just I just am not interested. It's also hard enough that like all of like my actor and artist and drag queen friends are like, no offense to y'all. Y'all are very talented in real life, but I'm not gonna watch your living room talent show. Like I have I have the wire. Can I just donate? I'll just give you $5 or $10 to your Venmo. Like, but I just have too much content to watch.
Fair. That's fair. I go on it for all the animal things. Like I love just watching like little dogs animals being silly. Silly dog stuff. But
I can't. And I know it's gonna be one of those things that I'll regret like not jumping on, because you know, early adopters, if it does catch off, have all these followers and I'll be like,
whatever. You know what? And it's already, I think it's well into
it's saturated.
Even if you go on it right now, you won't be an early adapter.
This is, you know, this podcast is the only content I need to produce. So
exactly.
Fun fact, did you know that the H1N1 swine flu pandemic that infected up to 1.4 billion people and killed about 575,000 people? Do you know where that originated from?
No, tell me.
The United fucking States and a factory farmed pigs. So nobody called it the American pig flu. So, and people would have been irate. And people would have actually, based on what we've done over here, would have been well within their right to do so. And when you have our leader or these reporters calling it the Kung flu, it's outrageous.
Yeah. I mean, it comes from the top, right? If that person is saying these things, doing these things, of course the rest of the people who follow him
are going to follow it too.
Exactly. And
agreed. So there's been the hashtag I am not a virus, which is a great place to go for to share and listen to other stories. So maybe some folks are having these, even some of them are just even just microaggressions that might be happening, like someone just moving away from you abruptly at a store or something, mm-hmm. you know, or staring at you. So we're all in this together, and, you know, also listening to people's stories is also a great way to be an ally. And I mean, I think, like, you know, Trump just needed, he needs a villain. And mm-hmm. this deflects from his mishandling of the situation, similar to how he's trying to pass it on to, like, oh, it's the state's responsibility to figure all this shit out. Then, like, yeah. Who are you? Why are you the president then if you're not going to be our leader?
Right. Exactly.
So all this was happening, and then I came across Andrew Yang. I don't know if you saw this, but he wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post sort of commenting on all of this.
Okay, I have not, but...
If you can tell by my tone, it's not good.
Oh, no, Andrew, no. Okay.
He said, here's what he wrote. This is the blurb that I was picked out from an article. He said, we need to step up, help our neighbors. He's talking about, he's specifically writing this op-ed talking to Asian Americans. And he mm-hmm. says, we need to step up, help our neighbors, donate gear, vote, wear red, white, and blue, volunteer, fund aid organizations, and do everything in our power to accelerate the end of this crisis. We should show without a shadow of a doubt that we are Americans who will do our part for our country in this time of need. It's time, and then he said, referring to Asian Americans, that it's time for us to embrace and show our Americanness in a way that we never have before.
Okay.
So the part of what some people are finding difficult with is kind of this idea that, for one, like, so some Japanese American leaders are criticizing him because it brings back painful memories of the rhetoric that is directed to them as Americans of Japanese ancestry who were incarcerated during World War II. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, their families were also encouraged to demonstrate their loyalty to America when they were forcibly removed from their homes and imprisoned in concentration camps, which was an order issued by President FDR. As, you know, great as he was, he definitely misstepped and fouled. And this is a terrible, terrible thing that this country has done after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So there's a few things that sort of happened to me when I saw this article, was like, you know, kind of really reading Andrew Yang for filth for this. And but it's also, it reminds me that it's really hard to be a public figure sometimes, because sometimes you step in it.
Yeah.
You know, and also these are such difficult, trying times. Like Andrew Yang, he is now a leader in our world, but I appreciate that he's trying to step up and rise to that and speak mm-hmm. to also this community. But who let him publish this? Like,
it's... Well, you know, I think that now we have to see how he handles it. Let's see how he responds to the people who are not so happy with what he said. And I think if he does that right.
Oh, yeah. Then, which I have no doubt that he probably will, you know. Yeah.
I mean, this thing about how, like, the people who are affected by it, the victims have, like, it's on them to prove is just not a good look. to suggest that's what you need to do is not a good look. I get it. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. The same thing. Like, you know, it's, you know, not. It's not women's job to have to, like, when it comes to, like, you know, not that, you know, rape or sexual assault just happens to women, but it does overwhelmingly happen to women. It's not women's job to fix it, to not mm-hmm. like, oh, don't wear short skirts or, mm-hmm. you know, have a nail polish that will be able to tell if your drink has been drugged. No, men just don't do these things. Yeah. Don't rape women. There it is. Yeah. It's, you know, stop victim blaming or not. I don't like, you know, victim blaming or survivor blaming or the, I don't know, person who's being oppressed or agitated, stop blaming them.
It's like when you ask a black person to explain to you why something was racist.
Yeah.
You know?
Not
it's
my
like,
job.
It's not, so,
like,
yeah.
Like you were saying, it's literally, this is not Asian Americans' job to stop mm-hmm. racism. So that's why, mm-hmm. you know, when he's saying that, oh, here's all the things that we need to do to prove that we're Americans, you don't have to prove anything.
Yeah.
Your birth certificate says it all, job done. Okay. And I can kind of see where this is, like, maybe why Andrew Yang didn't do so well with Asian American voters with this, you know? Like, is he just, I think, maybe misstepped and, you know. So going back to what, you know, in 1941, Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066. And like I was saying earlier, they were told to be good Americans. And let's not forget, Executive Order 9066 provided for the forced mass removal and incarceration of more than 110,000 individuals of Japanese ancestry. And I mean, this was a violation of their constitutional rights as U.S. Mm-hmm. citizens. These were U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. As George Takei read me for filth on the stairs in an event when I accidentally said Japanese internment camps, these were Japanese American internment camps. Mm-hmm. And George Takei rightfully so read me for filth. But I was nervous and I just forgot one word, but it makes a difference. Yeah. So there's this, the other thing that Andrew Yang brings up in his article, and he talks about Asian Americans in World War II in the military. And he says, you know, during World War II, Japanese Americans, they volunteered for the military duty at the highest possible levels to demonstrate that they were Americans. And he goes on to say, now many in the Asian American community are stepping up, trying to demonstrate that we are part of the solution. So what Andrew Yang is referencing is for the 442nd Regimental Combat Team and the 100th Infantry Battalion. So, I mean, so this was an example of patriotism that Asian Americans should follow today. But these groups were formed as segregated units of Japanese American soldiers to serve in the war. They were also the most decorated unit in the U.S. military history for its size and length of service. And the unit also suffered casualties that added up to several times the number of people that it rescued. And it kind of reminds me of, again, they probably were sent to the front lines, similar to, like, you know, the black battalions as well that fought in World War II. Mm-hmm. So it's really great that Andrew Yang referenced this and mm-hmm. put a pin in it. Let's make this a movie. I'm tired of seeing just white people fighting in World War II. Other people were there as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this article also fact checked it. So here's the thing, Andrew Yang. Not all of the soldiers volunteered willingly. So, yeah, it's true that some of the units started out recruiting volunteers, but the government eventually just drafted Japanese Americans from the concentration camps. They're just like, oh, you're going to go fight. And essentially drafting them out of prison and giving them no choice but to fight for their country mm-hmm. to keep their families behind barbed wires. Their families were not then, you know, freed. And again, mm-hmm. we're having to talk about freedom in, you know, the 20th century. Also, there was the Heart Mountain 63. So they were a group of dissenters and protesters who resisted the draft. They were all incarcerated at the Heart Mountain camp. They refused to fight until their rights were restored. And they were arrested and convicted in the largest mass trial in Wyoming's history. And this was unconstitutional. It was illegal for this whole entire thing to happen. And so this is why I think you start, you know, you hear a lot about the model minority because Japanese Americans, they returned after everything was said and done. Oops, sorry that we put you away in these camps. We won the war. They did so without a fuss. And I could also imagine that there probably was like the trauma of that whole entire experience that there's a lot of feet. It's traumatizing, I would imagine, yeah. for these families to then. Yeah. Okay, we're just gonna go back, like, and so you start getting this idea of the model minority presented through the media because they're all like, huh, "Wow, thanks for not, you know, being like those noisy black people who get all angry yeah. about their rights." Da, 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 mm-hmm. da. And you know, it's funny because like I remember the idea of the model minority being in my fucking history book, and it gets indoctrinated to us, like, as, you know, kids about mm-hmm. the model minority and what that is. It's in my goddamn fucking history book. So these Japanese Americans, they rebuilt their lives without a single complaint, and their children were like, fuck that. No.
Yeah.
Like, when they hear the stories or they were there, like, you know, George Takei grew up, like, he was there at a mm-hmm. concentration camp. And so that's where you get, through their protest, the Civil Liberties Act, and that happened in 1988, signed by Ronald Reagan. It's like the second good thing that he did behind being like, let's tear down the Berlin Wall. in that granted a redress of $20,000 and a formal apology to every Japanese American incarcerated during World War II. That's also known as reparations. So we do have a history of granting reparations. This whole entire experience has kind of just snowballed into this sort of journey and experience that is currently happening, and how we need to not repeat the same steps of what happened before. Because people are comparing this, like, this is our World War II. Great. Right. Let's not let the racism that we've done in the past show up on this moment. Let's be better. Let's meet this moment and do better.
Yeah. Do you remember, this reminds me, do you remember after 9/11 where so many brown, Muslim, Indian, especially the Sikh population, they had to prove that they were with America or Americans. I remember my dad would have a little American flag and stuff like that. And, it's kind of proving that we are not them, and it's just that this stress of trying to avoid being blamed for something that you had no control over. We keep doing the same thing.
Well, with that point too, it just made me sort of think, and it's kind of a tangent, but not, that's bullshit anyways, because it's it's so frustrating because it's this blanket sort of racism that just sort of happens, because you just named all these different groups of people who are all different, aside from the fact that they're also humans, but then we're all humans, so let's look at that as well. But all of the people that were participating in 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabian passports.
Yeah.
And we have not yet done anything. Saudi Arabia keeps getting away with any and everything.
Yeah.
Because, they pretty much own
oil.
Because of oil. They own 5% of our economy. And, you can carve up, Saudi Arabia can carve up and murder American citizens, and we won't. They continuously murder American citizens. They murder that journalist. They can get away with from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
These terrorists came. So it's really annoying because it's we've not even really, here it is, these people are having to prove, and it's you know what? No, make the fucking government prove they're Americans, George Bush, Dick Cheney, they were un-American in their response.
Yeah.
So the campaign hashtag Wash the Hate, which strives to spread awareness of anti-Asian racism amid the pandemic, and it's supported by dozens of community organizations, including the Japanese American Citizens League. So let's wash that hate. Let this be this moment where we meet this moment by being that we want to look back and we're like, we did a great job on how we handled it, how we were there for each other. Let's let this whole entire moment bring out the best in us and not the worst.
Yep.
Well, what are you watching these days in your COVID-19 bunkered down?
Oh my God. I'm watching all the things I haven't watched and put it off. So I am watching Little Fires Everywhere you told me I need to check it out.
And was I wrong? So Little Fires Everywhere is starring Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington.
You and I watched Big Little Lies, and you're like, if you loved that, you would love this. And
yes,
I love it. And I can't believe I can't binge it because
it's probably for the best.
No,
good,
it's not for the
good.
Best.
Yes, you can turn it into quite the monster. And it's better that way because then you have to savor it. I kind of really like that Hulu does this. They released the first three episodes and now they're weekly.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to just have a little bit of you've got that weekly thing to look forward to.
Yeah, I know it's nice, but I don't like it.
I find that it helps me to, otherwise I will binge a show and I won't really remember what happened. I'm like, oh,
you're right, you're right.
It's like cramming for a TV show. But the other part is if the show is very complicated, then you have the difficulty of remembering what happened every week. Luckily, the show is not that complicated. It's complex in the way that the character relationships are, but it's not Westworld. Set in the 90s, which I'm loving.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, so it's like, it's set in 96 or something, 96, 97.
Yeah, 1996.
Yeah, it's, you get all those like nostalgia type, like the music that the teenagers are listening to.
Yes, they're watching The Real World, yeah. Ricky Lake.
The clothes there. The clothes, do you remember Contempo?
Yeah. I do, yeah.
Like the store Contempo.
Contempo casuals.
I feel like the clothes they're wearing, I'm like, those are in Contempo.
Oh, yeah, they totally were shopping there. What I also just love, too, is like it's set in 1996. And again, like I feel like the 90s is when we were talking. It was like, I feel like the 90s picked up where like the 60s had left off, right? Because you had like a resurgence of like the sexual revolution was coming back. We're talking about race and racism. And so the show is, you know, there's, it's about class. It's about, you know, race. Like Reese Witherspoon, I have to applaud her because back like in the, it wasn't probably like the last like 3 years before I couldn't care. Like she used to be like a Becky to me, like Reese Witherspoon, really. Just kind of like a bit of a Becky. And she's really turned a corner. And I feel like I know the exact moment when it happened. Because for she kind of disappeared for a while, right?
Right.
And she was at this, like, I love watching, like, the Hollywood Round, Hollywood Reporter does these roundtable conversations with, like, whoever's been nominated. So, like, they'll do, like, the Emmys or who has, like, a hot sort of TV show or movie that they're in. And so it was, like, her, Eva Longoria, Kerry Washington, and, like, I don't know, Nicole Kidman or something. And Reese Witherspoon, like, she's, like, quite the talker. Like, she's very, like, extroverted. Like, I've also gone down a rabbit hole of watching her and Kerry Washington in interviews. And she just loves to talk. She loves to talk, loves to talk, loves to talk. And I get it because so do I. So it's like I can see it in her. So pot, kettle, I'm black. I see you. But she was sort of taking over the whole entire conversation. And then she was talking about how it was so hard for, like, she's like, there weren't any good roles for women. She's like, there just wasn't anything. And so she's like, I stopped acting because there weren't any roles. And then she started reading a bunch of books and buying the rights for them. And she was going on and on about how hard it was for, you know, women. And I could see Kerry Washington just, like, politely, like, looking at her and going, and then waited for her moment to be like, yes, Reese, and I agree. And I mean, and as a black woman, it's even harder. And you can just sort of see like Reese Witherspoon's eyes just go bing bing, and just like she just shut up and she just listened to Kerry Washington talking about how it's even harder for black women. There's even less roles.
Yeah.
They're making even less money.
Right.
And since that moment, I feel like, you know, in the morning show, she had a pretty diverse cast, her choosing to do like this show. And she just is talking more. She's a much better awoken ally, I would say.
She's a good listener. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I appreciate because she often is playing like she plays that role of just like white woman
so well.
And
oh
what's
my
nice
God.
Because she did it very well in Big Little Lies, but now she's playing white woman who talks about race. And it's just like, she does it so well.
And it's set in this like very wealthy Midwest little town, you know?
Town.
I thought it was
a made-up town.
No. I know this town because my parents actually moved, when they moved from San Francisco to Cleveland, they moved to the town right next to it. And so when my dad goes to work, he usually like drives through Shaker Heights. And Shaker Heights is just as you see it in that show. It's beautiful. The mansions are something to look at.
I just love how, like, I mean, so far with the show, and if you read the book, maybe you know where it's going, but I have not and you have not.
No,
so
I
we're
have
like
not.
Where is this going?
No.
And I just I think like the all the characters and relationships are very interesting. I think the teenagers are very interesting too. One, they're casted, they look like actual teenagers. And just like I feel like it's, I don't know, it's got a little bit of like teen drama in it as well.
Yeah.
That I love.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the thing that it made me think about, because I've been thinking about this a lot since you mentioned it to me. It I think is exploring like mommy issues or mother-daughter relationships.
Yes.
And I never really thought about that until you brought it up to me.
Yeah. It's complicated. I think that it's complicated. And I've had this conversation with a few of my girlfriends too.
Yeah.
That like, you know, the usual thing that people say, oh yeah, she has daddy issues or whatever. Like, actually, we tend to have a lot of complicated relationship with our moms because, you know, we look up to our moms for how we should, when we are young, you know, to how are we going to be. You know, we emulate what they do. We always feel like we need to please them. We need to be what they want us to be, to a point where I think a lot of us, it's really hard to reconcile, like, especially when you're older, like who you are with like what your mom was or who she wanted you to be. And a lot of the, a lot of those complicated relationship is kind of in this show, which is, I think it's a great, I feel like this show is the one of the first shows that actually is looking at mother-daughter relationships.
We don't see that too often. In front and center. Like, I feel like a lot of TV shows, you might see, like, an episode about it, but it comes and goes so fast that you don't really even look at it. But, like, this show, for me, it was the first thing that I recognized because you had just mentioned it to me, like, 2 weeks prior before I was watching it, because I had never really thought about that. And I think it's something too. I think something you made me think about too, like, of course, because, like, I think already the expectations that we put on women are so much more so than add on for even the mothers who, like, expectations that's put onto them to being a mother and then being a mother, a modern mother of like, you're working, but you're also probably statistically, like, still expected to do all the other, run the house essentially, you know? And then there's also the pressure of, like, for a lot of parents, their kids in some ways are an extension of themselves. That's not the healthy way, but that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, that's,
and so you look at them as a reflection upon you and how other people are viewing you, and then you as a mother and you as a woman, and it's complicated as fuck, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more expectations put on you.
And then there's, like, another layer for anyone who's a person of color. Because then you have to think about, like, my, you know, my mom's things that the complications that we have are, like, that has to do with bringing in the traditions of on the culture and our background and, like, that expectation of, like, how a woman is supposed to be in that culture. You know, and then you have, like, someone like me. I moved here when I was 13 or 14, and, like, I grew up here, and I was in Japan for 7 years prior to coming here. And, you know, the this whole, like, assimilating with U.S. culture and reconciling that with, you know, my background, I'm Bangladeshi, and it's, like, it's so hard because it's so different. And so the expectation from my mom is very different from, say, like, someone, you know, someone who was born and brought up here. So it's different for different people, different cultural background, and it gets complicated.
Oh yeah. And I think, I mean, it just made me think, I can't even imagine, cause it's the bridging of so many of two different, very different cultures, and you have your foot in both of them and the challenges of that, because it's also your own wants and desires, but also, like, everybody wants the love of their parents and the respect of their parents, and you also want to fit in, but then you also want to honor traditions, but also sometimes you're like, with some traditions you're like, but wait, why?
You know? exactly and you know, and on top of that, like, I think at least in our generation, I think our moms had us in relatively young. You know, my mom had me when she was like 23 or 24.
Yeah, same with
and,
my mom.
And so then you have to think about, like, they were still so young.
Oh,
and, you know,
trying to
now,
figure it all out.
Right. And I can't imagine. I mean, I'm in my 30s. I don't have a child, you know?
Nope, so, not yet. Although during this lockdown, I have found myself perusing adoption websites.
Oh,
I feel
God.
Like sometimes you just, have you found yourself doing something or online doing something? You're like, wait, what? And that you can blame it on quarantine brain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. I mean, I don't know what. I feel like there's, I'm a lot more, like, because I have all the time now. I'm a lot more curious.
Like,
so, like,
everything.
I'm Googling everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can,
like,
even,
wait, I have time to Google, like,
where
was ice cream invented?
yes.
I started doing The Wire.
Oh,
everyone,
okay.
I was, I was reading this article and it was saying, like, you know, things to do in quarantine. They're like, well, now you can finally watch The Wire. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. This is like, I have, this is actually the time to, because I've been really into like moody sort of things. I'm not, I don't know why, but I'm not really interested in like watching like a lot of comedy things. I have no idea why, but like, yeah, I kind of want gritty storytelling right now, because I watched The Ozark, devoured it.
Oh my God, devoured it. That I monstered, as you call me a monster.
You're a monster boy.
Yeah.
Monster. A monster is, for those of you who don't know, a monster is when someone stay up late.
We coined this for ourselves.
Yeah, we'll just stay up ridiculously late devouring content of some sort.
Exactly.
And marathoning a marathon monster. Yeah. Just, yeah. Yeah, like I thought the Ozark, I've always enjoyed the Ozark. And if you're not watching the Ozark, we won't spoil anything, but fuck. It reminds me of Breaking Bad, but it's all of the things that I liked about Breaking Bad and plus all the things that I thought were missing from Breaking Bad. For instance, like number one, the main reason why I enjoy Breaking Bad for the storytelling, but I had a hard time with it because the female characters were terrible and they weren't well written, you know? And in the Ozark, the female characters are amazing in it.
They're like, memorable. Yeah.
They're memorable.
They're definitely memorable. I mean, yeah.
The wife is in on it, you know? Yep. That's a huge shift and change. I always find that things are more interesting. I hate it when people have secret identities. I think that like the most interesting thing about storytelling is the relationships.
Yeah.
And if someone's being kept away from that full identity of someone, it just makes it not interesting. But like when they're involved, what they know, then they're able to be involved and it makes it that much more interesting, you know? And the thing with the Ozark, you never know when someone's gonna get got. Like things will happen.
There's like double, triple, quadruple crossing and it's just like, it's crazy.
I was watching like the last two episodes of season three. I couldn't sit down. I like, not like, you know, people say, oh, I couldn't sit down, but it's hyperbole. No, I was literally pacing in the living room watching this fucking show. And when the credits finally rolled for the last episode, I felt all of my tension release. I felt like I could feel my butt just unclench. Like I had been holding all this tension for so long. And like,
I mean,
you never know when someone like is going to get got on the show. And someone, people can get like people. That's why you always have to be on in, like every scene. I'm like, oop, this person can get shot. Anybody. You never know. You never know.
Yeah. If you're not watching it, watch it.
You're doing the wrong thing. Yeah.
I'll try not to spoil anything, but that ending was just bananas.
Because the season three ending, we won't spoil anything, but I'm looking at the time frame and I'm like, how are they going to wrap this up? And oh man, within like 40 seconds, they wrapped that season up. I was like, oh, I was in shock. But similarly, so I started watching The Wire and I monstered season. I pulled a Maury and I monstered season one.
Oh, you monstered it? So it's on my list as well. I watched up to the end of second season, like, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago. But I haven't watched after that. So I'm going to go back and restart.
It's got a baby, Michael B. Jordan. And
oh, that's right.
A baby Idris Elba. But when is Idris Elba not he just doesn't age. So even when he's got the Rona. Yeah. But like, it's very interesting. I don't usually like crime dramas. But this one feels like one episode of like Law and Order stretched over the course of like 10 episodes and shows. I don't like crime dramas because I feel like they're very one-sided. And this show shows the complexities of everyone involved. Sort of like that show 7 Seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
it has that feel.
It does, which I feel like 7 Seconds probably, whoever wrote 7 Seconds, I'm now thinking like, oh, they watched The Wire. Like,
of course, yeah.
And I had friends who, I said I was watching The Wire, and everyone's like, be prepared to have TV ruined for you. Because like, everyone's like, it's one of the best shows ever. And the performances are amazing. The writing is so smart. Like season one was so well thought out where like a character, someone will get named or someone will mention something or one character will show up and have one or two lines. And it always comes back. Like, nothing ever just frivolously happens in the show.
Yeah.
It's so well thought out that something will... You're like, oh, that moment that I thought didn't mean anything, it's back and it means everything.
Yeah. So I was talking to my friend who is, I talked to him a lot about TVs and movies. He's a director. And he told me that, you know, what The Wire is the show that changed the face of television.
That's what someone was saying. Yeah.
So it's, and it makes sense why, because it's an excellent show. Yeah, so I need to go back and rewatch. I know that I'm missing a lot by not having watched, you know, third season on. So.
And if you, even if you don't have HBO, I do because I'm linked on your account. thank you. We share. But HBO is free right now for everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Or like they've released like most of their top shows. So like The Wire, Sopranos, Veep, you can watch them for free.
Oh my God, that's maybe. Amazing.
Yeah. All right, now let's jump into the fact check. Lots to check today. So the number of cases in South Korea for number of deaths that they've had is 208. That's in total much lower than what we have here in the U.S., which is currently at 16,697, as we've discussed, those numbers are actually probably higher. Speaking of depressing numbers, as more states are reporting on the rate of mortality amongst different races, it was reported in Chicago that 68% of the deaths were African American, and that's six times the rate of whites, and they only make up 30% of the population. And Louisiana, African Americans, Black folks have accounted for 70% of the deaths due to coronavirus. Way too high. Flipping the script, Kerry Washington and Reese Witherspoon, we talked about Little Fires Everywhere. Did y'all know that they both auditioned for Clueless? I mean, it's wild. Just think, we would have a much different Clueless, and we'd still be able to appreciate Dion because it wouldn't be crazy Stacey Dash. It'd be wonderful Kerry Washington. Ah, what could have been, but at least we finally got them together. I want them in all of this. They should do like a stage reading or something, right? Tweet at them. Also with Little Fires Everywhere, how we were talking about how we don't really see these mother-daughter relationships explored, similar to Hustlers or even Birds of Prey, I think we're seeing more diverse stories about women because women are now leading the charge and writing these stories and driving these stories, and it's making a world of difference. Maury mentioned that she stopped watching The Wire at season 2. So those of you who are joining in The Wire, I hear it can be a bit of a slog through season 2. I'm in the middle of it. You just got to push through is what I've heard. I had talked about that I wish that we had lost the American Revolution because slavery would have ended sooner. And ding, 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 it's true. We've talked about this on the show before, but the Brits stopped using slaves in 1833. The Slavery Abolition Act went through Parliament, and it abolished slavery in most British colonies, freeing more than 800,000 slaves. They didn't even have that much compared to America, which they just ramped up after they lost the American Revolution. I mean, it was still a lot and still shitty, but not as much as America, who was death number one when it came to slaves. And it officially took effect on August 1st, 1834. So that's y'all's Juneteenth. August 1st. And still way decades earlier before slavery was abolished in the U.S. And they didn't have to even go through all those Jim Crow segregation. I mean, they had their own thing, but I was throwing around the word sovereign and sovereignty like I knew what I was talking about. What I was referring to, what the Queen rules over, is known as the Commonwealth, which consists of 54 nations, which does also include Canada and New Zealand, and could have been us if we had just lost that damn war, and we still would have had our independence eventually. 54 countries. It's like it's a club that the U.S. is not a part of, and I'm not surprised. I had mentioned that there was a decrease in domestic abuse calls. That might be the case over in Europe, but actually here in the U.S., we're seeing a spike in domestic abuse calls. So if you or someone you know it needs help, please reach out. There are services ready for you. You can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. Or you can go to thehotline.org and you can actually chat with someone through their website. And we mentioned the syphilis experiments. It was actually the Tuskegee study, which actually we go into depth in episode 80, which is appropriately titled A Peek Behind the Jockstrap, which I don't think has anything to do with the Tuskegee experiment. You'll have to go back into the archives to figure out what we're talking about. And finally, I just want to say this. My heart goes out to the Bernie Sanders supporters. Now, we recorded this episode before he officially made his announcements, and I feel like some of my words we're talking can seem a little callous now, looking back. But speaking to all you Bernie Sanders supporters, y'all should feel so proud of the work that y'all have done. We are two sides of the same coin as a Elizabeth Warren supporter and former Bernie Sanders in 2016. So please take this time to mourn, heal, take a beat. And when you're ready, come back and join the fight. Because you know what? It is. It's all hands on deck. We need your fire to continue pushing this party and the country to the left. The road to progress, it's never ending, and we are paving the road for a destination we will never see, just as those who've come before us did for us. Well, that's the show for this week. Feel free to tweet at us. You can join us on Facebook. We're also at the Minority Corner Kids Playground. And don't forget, you can also email us at minoritycorner@gmail.com. Drop us a voice memo. How are you doing? What are your questions? What do you got to say? Let's get you on. And thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.